I'm Brian.
I'm Griffin. This is the eBay for Business podcast, your source for the information and inspiration to help you start, manage, and grow your business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 208. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Griff. Good to be back in the studio.
It's good to be back in the studio. Of course, the news this week is all about
the Queen.
She died.
She did die.
Yeah.
After a wonderful 70 plus years.
Well, she was 96.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. But 70 plus years as Queen. Godspeed to her, and hopefully the king has a good reign.
Here's hoping.
For all of our UK colleagues, especially.
Anyway, our thoughts and our
prayers
go out to the people of the UK.
And the Commonwealth.
Is there still a Commonwealth?
The greater Commonwealth. Yeah. I actually listened to the Prince this morning. I thought he had a really nice, like, 6 minute or so, like, kind of talk.
Oh, and, did he?
Yeah. Hmm. It's got to be.
He wore all that regalia.
No, it was just a suit.
Oh, that's the one where he was in a suit.
Yeah, just suit and a chair and just kind
like
of
like a common talk. Guy.
And it was interesting. Their expressions are different than our expressions here in the United States. And he said, my dear mama. And then he said, papa. And it's one of those things where, at least here in California, or at least for me growing up, it was mommy and daddy or whatever it was. It wasn't papa and mama. So it was interesting to hear a 70-plus-year-old man, you know, reference that. It was rather, I don't know, it was endearing.
Yeah, in Massachusetts, we sounded like bleeding sheep because you called your mother Ma.
Ma.
Ma. Ma. The whole of Massachusetts sounded like a farmyard.
Well.
Yes.
Who do we have in the green room this week?
This week, we have a second installment of our in-studio seller interviews with an eBay seller named Sarah Ayer. And then we have a few seller questions to address and one question that we don't need to address at all.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How can we have a question we don't need to address and we use it?
Well, I'll tell you, because somebody already answered it.
Ah, I'm intrigued now. Who answered the question? What is the question?
Well, patience, Brian. All will be revealed in the You Got Questions segment.
I suppose that's what is called a teaser in podcast parlance.
You suppose right. Hey, do you have any news this week? Because I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Good, because I don't actually.
Okay.
What news do you have?
Well, I have a simple update to the snafu, otherwise known as the German Packaging Act. Remember that one?
Won't bother. What now? But I do want to give a warning to all of our listeners.
What's that?
Do not go look up what the actual words are in the acronym snafu.
Oh, okay. It's an old thing. Everyone knows.
I know, but people don't actually know what the words are oftentimes.
Anyway, this news isn't too earth-shattering. It's just more of a clarification update.
What is it?
So I have recently, like last week recently, learned that if you are a business seller and you use your social security number as a tax ID on eBay, you do not have to register with either Lucid or a third party like Leeson Zero. So let me repeat that. You use your social security number, you do not have to register. Should we have known that earlier? Yes, mea culpa, we should have. By the way, there'll be a few mea culpas in this episode. But yeah, that's what I learned.
So what if I don't use a social security number, but instead use an employee identification number, also known as an EIN?
Oh, yeah. If you haven't registered with Lucid, you can change it back to your social security number. But if you have filed taxes with your EIN, your employee identification number, you should keep that EIN number on your account. Otherwise, any 1099-K forms will be filed under your social security number, and that could present an issue.
This is complicated.
So it is complicated, and eBay knows this as well. That's why we can tell you something, but only so much of that something, which is eBay is now working on a site-wide solution to this thorny issue called the German Packaging Act, and we may have news to share in the coming months, so stay tuned.
Well, that's cool, and I'll also say to all of our listeners, if you actually followed Griff's earlier rules and you actually went and signed up with Lucid or Leeson Zero and you only have used your social security number, write into Griff and ask him for a mug.
No, I think our advice was if you do this, not to use your social security number.
Right.
Because whatever number you provide to them on the registration databases, it's publicized.
Right.
So they apparently, since our last conversation, the folks who control the German Packaging Act realized this. And they said that if you're using a social security number, you don't have to go through it.
It goes against every privacy concern the German country has. And they're pretty strict on privacy. They're stricter than we are here in California. And we're pretty strict.
Pretty strict.
Yes.
And I want to apologize if any of the information that we provided previously was a little confusing. I think what I really want to do at this point is to let sellers know, don't worry about it too much. Yeah, if you sell a lot into Germany and you're a business and you have an employee identification number,
go for it.
Go do it. Just be in compliance. But if you're using your social security number, even if you have a business account, the only tax ID you're using is a social security number, then you don't have to do anything. You don't have to restrict your listings to not going to Germany. You have to do anything. Good news, right. I guess. Yeah,
it is good news.
Well, now that that part of the show is out of the way, let's meet our in-studio seller guest for this week.
Let's.
We're always blessed when sellers come by the campus because we get to grab them for a few minutes and talk to them here in the studio. And joining me today is a seller, Sarah Ayer. She sells on eBay under the user ID Sarah Styles LLC. And as we do for every seller, we'll put a link in the summary overview for this episode with a link to her store so you can check it out. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. It's been amazing to be on the campus and meet everybody and learn things and excited to be here.
I should fill in people in case you haven't heard in a previous episode that we brought a lot of sellers to San Jose this week, and they're meeting with various teams to learn about what's going on with certain products and features and also to get their input. So I want to start off with that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
What did you learn this week that was interesting or something you didn't know?
So I've met with the seller experience team a few times and talked with them, and that I think has been the most informational to me. eBay can be a black box as a seller, and sometimes you're like, well, what about this? And then, you know, one seller says this and one seller says that. And so it was nice to talk about, but even within eBay, they had different opinions on it. So I think it's definitely like seller based, but we were talking about, you know, should you do sell similar? I don't currently end listings and do sell similar. And I was talking with some of them this morning about different strategies and then how to test it and see if it's working because it's different for everybody, right? Which is why it's a black box. We talked about doing sell similar, promoted listings, some things I didn't know about that. And the networking with different sellers at this level. I'm from Denver, and so we have a decent community of resellers, but a lot of casual sellers. And so it's nice to be talking to people that are more of a business and have different views on how to kind of do things on eBay and run it as a business.
Now, your business on eBay, it's Sarah Styles, so I'm going to make the assumption that it has something to do with style, fashion, apparel.
Yes. Women's clothing, shoes, purses, maybe like 2% men's, just if I run into something that I'm like, oh, well, obviously that'll sell. But it's mostly women's because I've spent 37 years learning women's fashion. And so...
37 years.
Oh, just because I'm a woman and I'm 37 years. Like, I've been wearing women's clothing. Well, I mean, I guess I was a child, but, you know, it's just what I know and like. And so it's pretty easy. I don't really have to research.
So you started out as an avid apparel consumer.
Yeah.
You knew the brands, you knew the styles, you knew it was on trend.
I did. And I've thrifted my entire life. So I've always.
Oh, you were way ahead of the curve.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have to learn. I mean, we thrifted out of necessity as a child, and I did upcycle for a little bit, so thrifting and then changing it into something different. Once I moved to reselling, it wasn't quite the learning curve as if you were straight out starting reselling.
How's that changed since your earliest memories of going to thrift stores?
I remember being completely ashamed and petrified that someone would see me. I mean, it was not a cool thing, and now it's all the rage to be in thrift stores and buy sustainable, which is helpful for what we do and in reselling because people want it. But then there's also people in the thrift store that are buying for themselves and the competition there too. But growing up, it was definitely like shameful. Like we were poor. We didn't have money. I wanted to go to the mall and buy the new things and we couldn't afford it. But it's led me to where I am now. So
when you think about it, the stigma decades ago of going to a thrift store, which you just mentioned, is much different today where people go into thrift stores and they YouTube while they're shopping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it really has changed. Has it changed the availability and or the pricing of items for you?
Yeah, it goes in waves. Definitely pricing has gone up since I was a child. You know, it used to be like 99 cents for everything and because it wasn't, you know, you weren't turning profits. I think it goes in waves in the area that I'm at. You can always tell when they get a new manager. Because the prices skyrocket and all the employees are like, give them 6 months and then they'll like find their... But it is definitely going up. And I think because they've, one, caught on that resellers are doing it and will pay more. And then two, they're cutting out the resellers and people are going there directly. I mean, and I do it. I will pay, let's say there's a Patagonia jacket. I'll pay $50 at a thrift store because it's $200 new. They're catching on that people are coming in directly and kind of cutting out the resellers. So I think it's definitely the prices have gone up. Resellers are getting more competitive. I think more resellers, in the beginning of the pandemic, I was seeing that a lot more. I think they're starting to realize it's work. And it's not just, hey, I buy something and I sell it. The amount that goes into actually making and turning a profit and the time. So I feel like I'm seeing more resellers kind of getting out of it that we're doing it casually. And
we were having a conversation downstairs with some sellers before we started recording, talking about how popularity can really sort of change a market. And I was talking specifically about storage unit auctions and how that whole environment, that whole universe changed once there was a TV show that popularized it, and suddenly people were flocking and just bidding willy-nilly on stuff, and it was mostly garbage.
Yeah, yeah.
And it made it frustrating, I think, and difficult for people who had, until that point, were depending on it for a source of inventory.
Right. Well, and I think social media getting bigger, resellers have almost kind of done it to ourselves. And there's other parts than just resellers doing it. You know, just in general, I think the younger generations want to be more sustainable and are looking at other avenues to do that. But it is big on social media and people are like, oh, you did this, you know, and they're like, oh, I can get into it and do it. And then they're starting to realize that it's more work than the 5-minute video you saw on YouTube of, oh, I bought it for $1 and I sold it for $10,000. Like,
yeah, that does tend to get people's interest.
Right, right. But as a reseller and you being an eBay, you know that that's not the case.
You are selling on eBay in one of the most competitive categories. How do you stay fresh and stay on top?
eBay, the tools and analytics that they provide has absolutely allowed me to make money at it and make a living. I'm speaking at eBay Open on tools and analytics because I believe so passionately about them, using all of them. And I think in a very saturated market, you have to do all of them. You know, I have coupons, I have offers, I have promoted listings, I send newsletters, every single thing that they have, I'm hitting sellers from every aspect. And I have to continuously remind myself that I am one of, I'll put a listing on and there's 10 pages of the exact same thing. And if someone is willing to buy mine, then I take it for what I can. I'm not a category that's like, oh, I'm going to hold out for a better price. I'm going to take the money that they're going to give me and turn a profit with that and just keep growing off of it.
So you're velocity faced. It's not so much the biggest margin, but it's the fastest sale.
Yes, right.
That's interesting.
I mean, I do have some higher end things, but it's much harder. I don't source frequently as frequently as you would have to find a lot of like one-off really high price items. I can go to a thrift store and find 50 pairs of jeans in an hour.
Wow. Still?
Yeah.
Even with all the competition?
I live in Denver and there's a lot. I mean, most people donate. They have more than they can put out on a daily basis.
Do you ever venture outside of the apparel category?
I do not. I take that back. My brother-in-law also resells and he's been doing it for 12 years. Every once in a while, he really enjoys the sourcing and not always the other back-end stuff. And so there's been times when he still sources and then I can sign what he has and he does everything. Anything that's going to turn a good profit, he will research and pick up. I know my niche. And that's why I can go in and find 50 pairs in an hour because I know exactly what I'm looking for. For me to venture out, I would have to spend a lot of time like looking up comps and figuring out what to buy. And I've thought about it here and there and I'm like, that's not how I want to spend my time.
And you're doing well with the niche you know.
And storage wise. So I work out of my house. I can fit, 25 pairs of jeans in a bin where you get all of these one-offs. It's much harder to have this space. Like when I was selling stuff for him, I had like 4 things in a bin, but they were a higher price item. So, it was space versus price and everything, but it's just nice and easy to be. And I have processes on how to take pictures quickly and everything. And yeah, I don't have any interest. I see videos and I hear other people and I'm like, ooh, the money to be made. And then I think about it and I'm like, no, I like it.
When did you start selling?
I've been thrifting forever. I started upcycling thrifted items in high school, local boutiques before eBay was just coming out. And you didn't really sell that on eBay. I did upcycle off and on for about...
So can you explain what that means, upcycle?
Upcycle. So I would buy things at a thrift store, clothing still, and take like a pair of jeans that had like maybe stains on the bottom and turn them into a skirt. Yeah. So like sewing and making like one-off boutique-y things. I sold them locally in stores around Denver, like in my 20s when I was young and hip and didn't have children. And then, off and on did that. And that was always like very much a side hustle, like going out money, not, I had full-time jobs.
What was your full-time job?
Had a lot of those.
Me too.
I think I have career ADHD. Like I have to conquer something to feel like I've done it. And then I'm like, and I'm on to the next thing.
Wow.
I was a hairdresser for a while. Went back to school to be a math teacher. Very different. And then the economy crashed and I couldn't get a job. I was applying with teachers who had 30 years experience and I just graduated college. So I went into corporate America doing statistical modeling and forecasting for a utility using the math degree.
Thus, your interest in statistics and analytics.
Yes. And I think it really helps drive a business, right? If you can make strategic decisions to help drive your business. And then I had my daughter, so my second child, and was like, I'm going to take, 6 months off to stay home with her because she's a baby and I'll go back to corporate America. She's seven.
Okay, and time flies.
I know. And so I was still upcycling a little bit here and there. And then I had my third child and I was like, the sewing is so hard with little kids that I was like, I'm cutting out the upcycle and I'm just going to start reselling. Well, he's five now. So that was 4 years ago.
Just 4 years ago.
I know. But I took off running. I mean, my first month, I was like, I'm going to do this. And I had like 300 listings.
Wow. 300 in the first month.
Yeah.
How important do you believe understanding or at least using the analytics and metrics tools that eBay provides for sellers?
Oh, I think it's everything.
Because I know sellers who don't use them at all.
I know. And I started social media to teach people how to use them because I think it is that important. I worked under 20 hours a week, grossing $100,000 on eBay because I make strategic decisions. And with the tools, you can try a tool and see if it works and look at your data. Otherwise, you're just flying blind and wasting time and money at times to do it. I don't know if you can tell.
I can tell.
Passionate about it. And I think that it can be scary. I know a lot of people don't like math. And so I try and break it down in a very easy way. But the tools and the analytics that eBay provides is 100% why it's allowed me to get where I am. I mean, I'm selling jeans.
Is it mostly jeans?
No,
then?
But I'm just saying, like, I'm selling women's fashion. It's heavily saturated.
Heavily, yes.
Right. But I can be successful and not work a ton because I make good choices.
So are you a good enough teacher that you've created some of your own competition? I mean, that would be the sign of a successful teaching, right?
That's a good question. Yes. But I also think that there's space enough for all of us. And I like to see people succeed. And so I think I have seen people succeed, but yeah, competition, but not taking away from my business, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. Yes. I think there's a lot of fear that some people have that, well, if I give you my business operations secrets, then you'll compete against me. And that's just not a good way to think about business.
No. And there's so many different ways to do it. I mean, I show you like the behind the scenes and everything and all of my numbers. I go on and show you my eBay data. I mean, you can see all of it, but it's in a... this is what this chart means. And if this goes up, then this is what you... And so you can take it so many different ways for your business that I don't think they would ever... You can't mimic someone. I mean, you could try, but to do it exactly how I do is just never going to work.
It's not, no. Even though in the back of my mind, I'm thinking I should stop at the thrift store on the way home and buy, and look at some women's jeans, but I'm not going to. Trust me. I've got a garage full of stuff I have to get rid of someday. Word of advice, beyond just the analytics and metrics tools that you would give an eBay seller who's come to you and said, you seem to be doing well and I'm kind of catching that bug. What should I think about when I'm starting out?
So a couple of things I think that elevated me, definitely consistency. And I think this is with any entrepreneur. I was talking with a reseller yesterday. It's like, oh, is it just luck that we're this good? And I'm like, no, what we do isn't hard. Anyone can learn to thrift. Anyone can learn to make a listing on eBay. What makes you successful is that you do it for 4 years straight. You know, I've listed every single day. And you not only does it make you better because you're doing it every single day, but that's how you grow a business, is being the consistent. So even if it's you're listing one item a month, you do it every month. You build those habits and then processes and efficiencies. I think a lot of times you start off, most resellers, and like, oh, I'm only going to do a couple items and I'll know where they are. And then it gets to be more and more, and you're spending 3 hours a day trying to find an item. I think that's what's kind of...
I know this story all too well.
Right. And I think a lot of people do, and I did. I mean, I didn't create like a full SKU system in inventory management until I had like 500 items, but now I can ship an item in 2 minutes.
You know exactly where it is. That's not easy with clothing.
I just have a SKU system. So a bin has a letter on it, and then each item has a number, and I put it in the SKU in eBay.
You need the custom label field.
Yeah, right.
Would you like to see more of those fields, or is one enough for you?
I think one's enough.
Okay. I'm just curious, because I'd like to see more. So
what would you do in the other one? I mean, maybe I do. What would you do in the other ones?
Well, currently, I use my custom label field to put in a lot of information. So the item location, and I use a bin system as well, and then the date I purchased it, where I purchased it, and how much I paid. And it would be nice to have four custom fields to do that. we have the one, but I use a spreadsheet trick that we've talked about on the, in the past. That's a little bit, there's a little bit of work, but you can put all that data in, separate it by a consistent delimiter, like a comma. And then you can, in any report you download from eBay in a spreadsheet, there's a function for splitting data in one column into separate columns. So that's what I, that's how I do it.
Yeah, which I do the same. And so I'm like, oh, it's fine, because I just, in my spreadsheet. But now that you say it, it would be nice, because you could, like, I can't sort by SKU now or by custom field, because the beginning of my custom field is like the date that I purchased it, and like my own SKU for my cost of goods in my financial. And so if I sort, like, I can't sort to know oldest, because that is. So it would be nice to have just a place to put just my SKU. So when I'm looking at my listings or when I'm shipping, I can sort by where it's at. So yes, I would like more. I learned something.
I have an ulterior motive for asking.
Oh, okay.
Because a lot of people on the product team now listen to the podcast, so I'm hoping they caught we caught their ear.
Yes.
But we've made that pretty clear, I think, in the past, that this is a great thing to have. It'd be nice to have more. Or at least the option to say, give me 2, 3, or 4 of these.
Yeah. I mean, you could leave it blank if you didn't want to use it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You've made it to this point. How many listings do you have right now, on average?
I'm sitting around 2,000.
Or do you want more?
No.
So you're kind of where you need to be?
Yeah. I mean, I work from home, so I'm out of space. I have 3 kids. Going off-site to run my business isn't really an option right now. I do it for the flexibility, and being able to ship at my house is huge. And so I just don't really have more space. And the time that I'm spending on it, if I were to grow bigger, I would have to start taking on more people. I have a virtual assistant and we're good. There's only so much time in the day, and my time is kind of tapped out. I would like to make more money. So I'm looking at ways to, with what I have, increase my average sale price, increase my sell-through rate, be more efficient in what I'm doing, but more listings. I'm not in the reselling world. A lot of times it's like listings, listings, listings. I have this big, huge store, and I would rather be more efficient with a smaller type store and make more money with less items.
Yeah, of course. I think that makes sense. Along with the growing interest in sustainability that comes from younger people entering the entrepreneurial space, there's also that idea that's been very popular for so many years that you got to grow, you got to grow. It's growth, it's growth, it's growth. But there's a real downside to growth. It's not always sustainable and comes with its own pitfalls. So I think it's interesting to meet sellers who say, what I have right now works for me, and I'm going to keep it at that level. I'm not really interested in growing it, although there's nothing wrong with
it. Well, and the struggle too with growth is your income. Like when I was in growth mode, everything I was making was going back into the business, which is worth it at the time because I got to where I wanted to be. But I would also like to take vacations with the money instead of buy more inventory to grow bigger. It works for people, but yeah, I'm where I want to be. I'm making what I would like to be making for the amount of time that I'm spending and having the flexibility. And I like bringing the money home now and being able to spend it instead of growing. Because if you have more listings, you're spending more money.
Yeah, of course. It's great that you feel that way and that that's your business model, because I think, or I know that there's a lot of people who feel a pressure to grow when they don't really want to grow. They're happy where they are. And it's great for you to, as a seller of success, to be able to justify, look, you're fine where you are. Just make sure that you're doing it the best you can, but you don't have to feel a pressure to grow.
Right. Well, and I think too, and I talk about this a lot on my social media, is if you're growing to make more money, but you're not the best that you are at 2,000 items, you're just going to keep doing bad practices with more items. And there's nothing wrong with growth, but it's not. A lot of times in the community we hear, you'll make more money if you list more items, which you will, but you're also spending more money. And if you're buying items that aren't good and aren't selling, you're just buying more of those same items.
Tying up all your capital.
Right.
Not going on vacations.
Right. So I always recommend, you know, grow, but, and this is part of why growing slow is typically advisable, because you're doing it in a strategic manner of making sure that all of your metrics are staying on track and you're not just buying more crap that's not going to sell, tying up all your capital.
Exactly. What's up for the rest of the day for you? I know the week is just about to come to an end. Do you know what's on tap?
I don't. So they gave us a schedule. I have 3 children and I usually manage their lives. And so I don't have to do that all week, and someone just comes and gets me and takes me somewhere. And so I'm kind of just hanging out, enjoying, and someone comes and gets me and tells me where to go. So I don't really know.
It's a pleasure to meet you, and you're a delightful person, and this has been a wonderful and informative interview. So I thank you for that very much, and I hope you'll check in with us, and possibly we can see what's going on in another 6 months or a year.
Yeah, I'd love to. I love listening to the podcast. It is so, it's probably my favorite communication eBay does, because you can put it on in the background while you're taking photos or listening. I mean, it's very informative and you can multitask
yes.
while you're doing it.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sarah Eyre sells on eBay under the user ID Sarah Styles LLC. We'll put a link to her eBay store in the summary overview for this episode.
You got questions?
We got answers. We got answers. We got answers. We got answers. We got answers.
I would try. I'd try and sing, but I can't carry a tune.
I didn't realize how.
We got answers.
We got answers.
I'm probably flat and tone deaf.
No, you sounded fine. Anyway, all apologies to handle. Before we get to the questions this week, I have to read this message. I really do. That was left on the Discuss This Episode forum on eBay Community's podcast page.
Is this the non-question?
No, this isn't the non-question. This was somebody who had a comment about last week's episode. Let me read it. Brian and Griff, you guys are killing me about the Glass Baby candle holders. Remember those? I can't believe you didn't put a clip of you looking these up on www.glassybaby.com to find out what these really are. These aren't just any glass holder. These are hand-blown glass candle holders that are handmade in Seattle, Washington. Each one takes 3 to 6 glassmakers to make one.
Huh.
Well, that's interesting. This company has also donated over $12.8 million
wow.
to organizations worldwide that provide hope and healing for people, animals, and the planet. Well, that's
good for
great.
Them.
That's great.
Great.
I don't work for or know anyone who works for this company. However, I own a few of their glass candle holders. So when I heard the mocking.
I don't mocking.
That's what she said, mocking.
Okay.
The mocking of their beautiful, artful product by two podcasters that I respect. Or was that respect really ill-deserved? That was such a disappointment. Next time, I hope you'll check out a product first. Respectfully, Christy Wright from Washington State. Well, Christy, yes, we should have checked it out first. And mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. I really apologize if you took offense to that. That we offended you. That's the right way to say that.
Apologize. Yes,
not
I would
iffy.
Agree.
You never apology should never be like conditional on an if. It should be, I apologize for offending you. Not, I apologize if you were offended. That's not an apology.
Right.
I apologize we offended you on this one. We really
And me too. Yeah. I it was not our intent. It was rather, from my perspective, it was one of those things where I was surprised at the value of the items and I had never heard of them. That's what kind of drove like the interest. And then we kind of went off the cuff a little bit.
Well, as we do, as we are wont to do, as, you know, irreverent corporate podcasters.
But I no intent from my part, definitely, to do any mocking. And I will say this. Thank you for sending in the information about the company. It's fascinating to read and hear about. It sounds like they do some good work.
And I'm going to confess right up front, even though she's now sent the URL for this, I haven't visited the website yet. But I do need to go, well, I could do that right now.
I can do it on my phone.
Well, you could do it on your phone, but I'm standing right here with my laptop, and I'm just going to go to Glass, because I want to see what they sell for. Hold on. Glassy Baby Company.
Look at the first one comes up is eBay. Oh, we're sponsored. That's why. We're buying the AdWord.
I see. Smart so glass. We're on the website, and oh, that's pretty. Wow. $3 from every purchase of 76. So there's $76. Some of these are... let's see. How much does this cost?
The 76 is the name of the glass. It's $125.
Oh, right. So here's one that starts at 60. So they don't start cheap. So that explains the prices. And I guess they're limited edition.
This is a neat one, though. The 76 one with the green.
Yeah, that's kind of nice. I look good on my shelf.
I don't collect candle holders, but maybe, I don't know.
How limited edition is this? Maybe I should be buying these instead of mocking them.
Maybe we shouldn't be shopping during the podcast.
Well, Christy has opened our eyes.
She has.
Now I have one more thing to clutter up my house. So yeah, they're perfectly cool. I think what we were making more of a comment on, even if it was an uneducated commentary, ill-supported by actual research, no research being the research we did, was that it's always fascinating to me when there's kind of that tulip effect afterwards where a market of limited supply suddenly explodes. And I can guarantee you, just as a side, I'm pretty sure most of the sellers who are reselling this aren't necessarily donating any of their proceeds to charity. Some might.
No, the company is.
Yeah. But that's the first sale.
Not the resellers.
Yeah, that's the first sale. So anyway, yeah, sorry. Will we do better next time? Well, I could tell you we try, but given my propensity for sarcasm, probably going to be a real difficult thing, Christy. I hope you'll take it with a grain of salt.
Thanks for the info, Christy.
Yes, thank you.
It was good.
And if you want to send me a glass baby holder, my address is 2145 Hamilton Avenue, eBay Inc.
And Griff will send you a mug.
I'll trade you a mug for one of these. Yeah,
that's not a very fair trade.
Oh, I don't know. Could be. Our next question is the question we don't need to answer. It was posted on our eBay for Business podcast Facebook group by a seller who wrote this, Brian. Looking for a little clarity when you schedule time away. If I allow sales, do I then have to change my handling time to correspond to when I return? I don't want to lose my top-rated seller rating while I'm gone if I allow sales. That's the question.
And we've talked about time away in previous episodes.
Yeah, we have.
But we don't have to answer this one.
No, we don't, because another seller answered it perfectly. And she's a friend of the podcast as well. You know her, Liz O'Kane. She responded to Robert with this, and it was Robert who wrote that. Liz says, like others have said, time away will do the trick for you. This is a much better option than changing handling times. When I would only change handling time, I'd have to update the handling time every other day as I was away so that buyers that purchased towards the end of my vacation wouldn't see a 10-day handling time when it was really only two. eBay's time away feature now auto-adjusts the ship date that the buyer sees. I've taken 6 trips this year, says Liz, ranging from 1 day to 10 days, and each time I've set up time away, it's worked like a charm. So thank you, Liz O'Kane.
Thank you, Liz, and thanks for our product team for listening to our sellers.
Yes, that's how that change happened.
It did. We got an earful after we made the time away, and that was the number one request, and they actually responded pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I think it was last fall it got introduced.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. Well, we all like to save a little money.
We do.
Or a lot of money.
Oh, yes.
And our next question is about just that. It was sent in by eBay seller Tisket, who wrote the following to podcast@ebay.com. Currently, I'm a top-rated seller on eBay, operating under Tisket, selling primarily clothing with a little over 1,500 items in my store.
Congratulations, Tisket.
That's a lot.
That's a lot in one basket.
Yes. Business is going well, but in looking into my costs, I noticed I could be leveraging all of those shipping charges a little more. Having weighed the pros and cons of a business credit card, recently I obtained one with a cashback option and would like to be able to pay eBay shipping fees and any other fees I'm able through the card. Naturally, I plan to pay off the balance every month. It is my understanding I can't do this directly through eBay, but I could link my credit card through PayPal. Any chance you might be able to walk me through that process or let me know of another way? I think this might be a benefit to other sellers out there wanting to get some additional cash back to reinvest. Thanks so much, Tisket.
This is such a good idea.
It is.
It is someone with a business head on their shoulders.
Yes.
This is a way to actually help defray some costs.
Or get funds to invest in some other area.
Right.
You can use your cash back for marketing or whatever it is.
So I'm not quite sure how you think I would know, but I don't know if you can set up a credit card. Can you set up a credit card on eBay to pay your fees? I think it's only a bank account, or is it a credit card now too?
I think you can also do credit card.
Yeah, so if that's possible, that's easy. You would just go into the payments tab, I think. You just go to the payments tab, and there's a setting there for adding a credit card, if it's possible. I still use my bank account, but you could use that credit card for paying eBay fees. But when it comes to shipping labels, at first I thought, I think I know how to do this, so I'm just going to say what I think. And then when I went to check what I thought was the right answer, it wasn't. And I went, oh dear, I don't know. So before I answer this, I'm going to have to ask someone. And I sent an email off to Nate Hayward saying, hey, do you know how to do this? And I hadn't heard back from him right away because, you know, our car links are busy. They're not just going to jump every time they get an email from Griff. Although I kind of like to think they do, but they won't. So I said, well, I better research this myself. So I delved into my PayPal account, which I haven't done in quite a while because I don't really use it. And I did, with some effort and some trial and error, figure out how to do this. And I wanted to tell Tisket how. But I've given the steps in our little script. So I'm going to let you start, Brian.
Okay. The first step is to add your new business credit card to your PayPal account. Log into PayPal. Then click your icon and name in the upper right-hand corner of the PayPal page. select account settings, scroll down to money, banks, and cards. There's a link under the cards section for link a new card. Select that and follow the instructions to add your new business credit card.
Yeah, that's how you add the card, and that's pretty self-explanatory. But how you do the next part is not, and this is where it took a little research on my part. I'm sure there's sellers out there who already know this, so mea culpa. Boy, I'm going to be using that phrase a lot.
You are.
You have to change a setting in something that's called on PayPal, your automatic payments. Now, on that same page as money, banks, and cards, you have to scroll down to the section at the bottom that's for automatic payments. That's what it's called, automatic payments. You're going to see three or so different external accounts there. And if the round blue icon for eBay Inc. shipping is visible, click it. If it's not visible, click the more link and scroll through your linked external accounts until you find eBay Inc. shipping. Now, this was a revelation to me because I really had no idea how many external accounts I've set up for automatic payment over the years. There are a lot of them.
Oh, I bet. A lot of expired accounts?
Well, no. I think there are accounts that if I went to use them, they would work. You know, a lot of websites where I agreed to set up my PayPal account. And it's also, you want to go through these and say, maybe I don't want all these. But after about on the third or fourth page, I finally found one called eBay Inc. Shipping. Now, this is different than eBay Inc.
Okay.
There's one there for eBay Inc. We're looking for eBay Inc. Shipping. And I don't know what eBay Inc. is for. Maybe that's for paying your fees. I have no
maybe
idea.
That was the old link to pay your fees.
I think it might be,
you know, before we did payments.
Yeah. So there is that link is there.
So then click that link and change the payment method for this external account to your new business credit card.
Yeah, that's it. That's all you have to do. But I want to note one thing, which is that no matter how you set up paying for things like your subscriptions or your eBay shipping labels through that eBay Inc. shipping account, PayPal will always go first to your cash balance. So if you have a cash balance and you buy a shipping label through PayPal, they're going to use that cash balance first. If there's a difference, then they'll go to your, in this case, your business credit card. You know what? I am so happy that she sent this question in because this is a really good bit of information for eBay sellers. Defray your costs a little bit.
Yeah, or get something back when you're paying those bills.
Yeah, it's important. I'm just learning the joys of cashback cards. Rob convinced me to get an Apple Pay account with a card that does cash back. Yeah, it does pay for a few DoorDash dinners, I have to admit.
Yes.
So
I keep seeing my balance on my Apple card because it's interesting. I'm using my phone more and more to pay for it. Even like lunch here in the cafeteria. I use my phone to pay for it. And then it's 2% back.
Yeah, and it adds up over time.
Right.
So that's really good. So Tisket, I want to thank you again for sending in that question and good luck. I think you're going to be a very successful seller.
Well, yeah,
she has got 1,500 listings up. She's on her way. So anyway, our next question is one of human error and remedies. And if anyone knows human error, it's me. It was sent to podcast@ebay.com by seller Joel. And he writes, "Hey, Griff and Brian." And he says, "I only said Griff first because of a recent episode." LOL. "Recently, I sold a rather pricey device. I accepted the customer's offer and got it ready for shipment after I purchased the shipping label. Then I received a message from the customer stating they accidentally input the wrong shipping address for their order. Originally, the shipment was scheduled to go to California, yet I just received a message from the buyer who said the correct address is in Utah. I informed the buyer that the only way I could correct the problem was to cancel the order and refund, and they would have to rebid on the item. However, they could potentially lose out on the item if another customer bid higher. If I cancel the order and need to refund the buyer, am I out the shipping cost? This was a pretty big hit to my weekly goal, so any insight is greatly appreciated. Thanks for everything you do and the continuous great sarcastic mocking work on the podcast." No.
Yeah.
"And continuous great work on the podcast, Joel." I know, it's kind of sitting in my head right now.
Other than him not leading with my name first.
Well,
I think this is a pretty easy one to answer, don't you?
I think we're both pretty thin-skinned this week.
I think so.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty easy. What would you say to Joel, Brian?
So I'd say, Joel, if you have to cancel an order for any reason, after you've purchased a shipping label, keep in mind the following. If the label was a USPS label, you should simply void it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll receive a refund for that voided label within 14 days. But if the label was UPS or FedEx, you aren't charged for those until the label is actually used. That is, scanned by the carrier at drop-off.
Yeah, and that's exactly the answer I would have provided. Now, if you want to figure out how to void a label, you just have to go to your Seller Hub, go to Orders. On the left-hand page, there's a page for shipping labels. It'll show you all the shipping labels you purchased, and you can find this one, and there's an option on that page for each label for void. And as long as you haven't used it, you can void it, and then you don't have to worry about it. You'll get, you know, your money will be tied up for a few weeks, but you'll get it back eventually.
I bet a lot of our customers were not aware of that.
Oh, yeah. I suspect that they might not have been.
Because it's not one of those things that happens very frequently.
Right. And, you know, we've talked about his quandary here, which is, you know, the buyer wants to change the address post-payment. There's a lot of different schools of thought here. I think we landed on, and I know I've landed on it personally, that if it's a cheap item, I just go with it. But if he says it's a high-priced item, yeah, he did the right thing. Anyway, our next question. Hey, guys, I recently purchased an item described as a cozy Sonoma lifestyle blanket winter Christmas holiday from a top-rated seller. I put the item on my watch list and soon received an irresistible offer from the seller and purchased the item. When I opened the much-anticipated package, I immediately realized that this was an old bedsheet, clearly part of a set. It's not a blanket, and I don't understand how anyone could mistake a sheet for a blanket. I am disheartened and feel duped and cheated by this experience. I immediately started a return and discovered that the return shipping is paid by the seller, so hopefully this debacle will not cost me any more money pending my refund. I looked up the seller, and they have an admirable 2,896 feedbacks with 99.7% positive rating. As a nascent seller on eBay, I dream of achieving such a high rating and so much positive feedback, but I also have to question how anyone can innocently mistake a sheet for a blanket when eBay has an appropriate category for this item. My question is, that was the lead up, how should I handle this situation? How would you handle this situation? I really enjoy your podcast and have been working my way through the history. I wish my first question was on a happier note. Keep up the good work, Liz. Okay.
Well.
So, Liz.
Sheets or blankets?
Blankets?
Sheets or blankets?
I don't know. I don't think that's the crux of the issue here. I would have handled it just like you did, Liz. You know, you didn't get what you asked for, so I would have, if it were me, made the return request since I didn't receive what I purchased. But I would have thought about this transaction and the seller, I think, differently than you are. And that's because sellers, like, for example, podcast hosts, are human. And they make mistakes, like mocking glassy babies, like sending the wrong item. There is nothing to indicate to you that the seller did this intentionally. Your disappointment, of course, is understandable, but you know, you didn't get what you wanted. But I would caution against lashing out at the seller or even suspecting the seller of intentionally sending you the wrong item.
And I would have to ask, why would any seller intentionally send the wrong item?
Yeah, why?
There's absolutely nothing gained by the seller, and especially if you think about how much feedback and experience that seller had.
Yeah, I'm a very active online buyer and seller, and I have, on rare occasions, received a wrong item. And at least on eBay, those sellers have always done their best to compensate. Like, they'll send the right item, but they immediately refund. And they've always mentioned, you know, hey, sorry, it was a mistake. I wish I could say the same for other online marketplaces, because my experience to date is not that. But anyway. On eBay, that's how it's been. And as a seller, I would be remiss if I didn't admit to you and to the rest of our audience of having on more than a few occasions accidentally sent a wrong item to buyer. I just did it last month. I sold a Hawaiian shirt and I grabbed what I thought was the right shirt, packed it up and shipped it out, and they weren't happy. But I didn't do it intentionally. There was no reason for me. So I just immediately refund them. And then I sent them the shirt for free. So it all worked out.
Well, that's super, super great service on your end. Well, so Liz, I would have to recommend that you don't let your justified disappointment in receiving the wrong item turn into a harsh judgment of the seller's motives. People make mistakes.
People, trust me. People make mistakes.
Boy, I once had something listed for 18 months, and then I went to find it because it finally sold.
And it was gone.
I couldn't find it.
Yeah, it's happened to me. And it happens to sellers, and we feel terrible when it happens. We don't do that intentionally. So have a heart, Liz. That seller didn't mean it.
Well, our last email for this week is from prodigal eBay seller Jerry, who sent this to podcast@ebay.com. I've been a seller on eBay for almost 20 years, but took off a few years, and now getting back into the selling game. I still have my notes from way back when, but need to know what all has changed during this time. So So it's kind of like I'm starting all over again. Thank you so much for mentioning eBay Academy. I was not aware of that, so this will help me out a whole lot. This podcast is the first one I have listened to, and I'm really enjoying it. Thank you again, Jerry, and her username is GJ1148.
I think her store name is My Ear Jazz.
Yes.
Great name, by the way. Welcome back to eBay, Jerry.
Yes.
We missed you. We wondered where you went. We often talked on the podcast. We would say, hey, has anyone seen Jerry? She hasn't been selling for a while. I hope she's okay. I think it would be fair to say that I agree with you. A few changes have been made on eBay.
Quite a few.
Yes, exactly. And eBay Academy will, as you discovered, will get you up to speed, as will the podcast as an adjunct.
And Seller Center, community. We've got we still have the community forums. There's an Ask a Mentor section where you, if you've got a question for a seller, you just pop in the community, ask the mentors, and they'll be able to respond. And then there's the broader community of like private Facebook groups and others, or ask the podcast.
Yeah, you can ask.
Just like she did.
We'll always give you a mug and if you send your question in. Well, as long as they're, and by the way, I brought a bunch of new mugs in my garage. We have another 12 here. Yeah, and there's also an eBay for Business Podcast Facebook group. You can find it just by searching eBay for Business Podcast. And there's lots and lots of smart sellers there, like Liz O'Kane.
Yep. Yes.
Who answered Robert's question and answered it properly. eBay Academy is a relatively new feature, so they keep it really up to date. If there's a change made on eBay, it's reflected there. And
it's really informative.
And you get there just by search Google for eBay Academy. It comes right up.
It does.
I love eBay Academy. I'm thinking I need to take a course in eBay Academy.
Didn't you write a course?
I think I need to take a course.
I think you wrote a couple courses.
I don't remember writing them.
Or did you edit them?
I don't remember editing them.
No?
No, I don't think they need me anymore. I think it's...
You're more
that's
important on the podcast.
Well, I'm more self-important on the podcast. Anyway, that's it for this week. Enough mea culpas and human errors. Thanks to everyone who sent a question. And there's mugs with your names on them and or actually on the packages to be more exact. And they'll be on their way to you in a week or so.
But not to despair. If you want a mug from our dwindling supply and you have a question about selling on eBay that you would like to have us answer here on the podcast, why not call us on 888-723-4630.
That voice line, 888-723-4630, is way underused. So please call that hotline any time of the day, any day of the week, at your convenience. You can leave a question or a comment, and we just might use it in an upcoming episode.
And sending you a mug.
Yes, of course.
From our dwindling supply.
It dwindles.
If you are not a call-on-the-phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
Hey, I have to tell you that I own that domain name.
You do.
Dwindlingsupply.com.
Oh, I thought podcast.
No, not podcast. No. I own the dwindlingsupply.com. If anyone wants to buy it, I'm selling stuff on the podcast.
Yeah, you can't be doing that.
No, I can't.
And now, instead of selling.
I'm so sorry.
Your three-point podcast checklist.
Check the announcement board on ebay.com/announcements for up-to-date seller news every day.
If you have a timely question and need an answer fast, try using the help pages on eBay under help and contact link on the top of any eBay page.
Need to review anything in this episode? Like how many times I said mea culpa, it's my fault? It's easy. Check the transcript for this and all episodes to follow up on what you've heard, even if it's unbelievably mocking, and to find the links we referenced during the episode.
Or to find errors that you can then send to Griff and get another mea culpa.
And a mug.
Is it mea culpa or mea culpa?
Well, I say mea culpa because that's how we learned it in Catholic school.
Yeah,
right?
Mea culpa.
Where you pounded your chest. Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. Oh, those nuns.
Oh, those nuns, yes.
Anyway, on our next episode, we'll talk to another eBay seller here in studio. His name is Jaron Moore, and he has a fascinating eBay story, and you won't want to miss it.
You will not. We'd like to again thank eBay seller Sarah Ayer for joining us this week in our studio.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.